the record reflect that we have Senator French here. I'm out of breath from the stairs. Senator Meyer, Senator Menard, and Senator Pasquin. This is Tuesday, April 6th, and we're starting the meeting at 4 minutes after 9. On the agenda today, we have House Bill 73, Firefighters EMT License Plates. Next, we have House Joint Resolution 53, Honor and Remember Flag. House Bill 225, State Procurement Code. So let's get started, and I want to thank Lori Berg and Molly George for being here, as well as my able aide, Sarah Munson. So let's start with HB 73, Firefighters EMT License Plates, and the sponsor of this bill is none other than our representative, Bob Lynn. Good morning, Bob. Come forward, please, and state your name for the record, and would you have a staff person accompanying you? Okay, good. And if she would do the same.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bob Lynn, representing District 31 in South Anchorage. It's a pleasure to be here this morning and to have you consider my HB 73 bill, which involves our firefighters and EMT. And the purpose of this bill is to recognize and to thank firefighters and emergency services personnel, providers, both the volunteer types as well as those who are paid. It makes no difference when you go into a burning building whether you're paid or you're volunteer, and the same thing for emergency medical provider. This bill has some side effects, one of which is to encourage volunteerism, providing the license plates. It's a hope that unless we recognize and acknowledge the importance of volunteerism of all kinds, especially for firefighters, and possibly plant a seed in the hearts of some that will go into action and help protect us all. And in closing,
hold a second. I just want us to recognize we now have a full committee here, and this is Senator Kukesh. Please continue. I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you. I'm just going to say that your bill packet also includes copies of petitions signed by folks supporting this legislation. There's well over 200 names. And I'm going to repeat what I said on the House floor here. Everybody in the legislature either has or is entitled to have their personal legislative license plate on their cars. And I put it on my car. It makes me a better driver, especially in campaign season. I'm very proud of it. But I tell you, I would trade that license plate for one of these firefighter plates because of what these folks do. I'd be even more proud to have one of those plates on my car. So with that, I respectfully request you to consider
this
bill.
Have you found this to be, like in other states, an effective method for getting more firefighters to recruit more volunteer firefighters?
I have anecdotal information on it. I've not done research on it.
My name is Nancy Manley. I'm staff to Representative Bob Lynn. And the Firefighters Association seems to think that it would work for them. And this is why they're pushing it so hard. And Susie is online to testify to that.
I was just curious on how many other states have done something similar to this. And I guess we do have Susie, you're online to answer any question on House Bill 73.
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. And I am also with the National Volunteer Fire Council, which is an organization that represents volunteer firefighters nationwide. And recruitment and retention has been a big problem nationwide. And we have found that there's not much we can give volunteers because it is a volunteer job. But when we give them these little perks, like the license plate, or we give them even decals, people want to belong. They want to belong to something that's good. And then, like Representative Lynn said, they're proud to belong. Mm-hmm. And so they want to share that. And people will just stop. I told a story a couple weeks ago when we were in another committee about my husband is a Purple Heart recipient, and he has a Purple Heart plate because he's proud of his service in Vietnam. And we had stopped in Glen Allen for lunch, and a young man approached him, and my husband's kind of going, what's going on? And the guy comes up with an extended hand, so my husband sticks out his hand, and this young man, couldn't have been more than 25, and my husband's in his 60s, said, thank you. Thank you for your service. At that point, my husband relayed to me that no one had ever done that to him, and it made him feel so good about what he did, because if you recall, when they came home from Vietnam in the late 60s, early 70s, they were not well received. So we need, you know, this is a feel-good deal. It needs to help people feel better about what they're doing. When these volunteers go out, or even the paid people, they give more than is expected, because anytime they go, they could be giving their life. And I think a license plate is a small price to pay when you're having people who give their lives, take time away from their families in training and everything else. It's, I just think, a very small price.
Okay, and thank you, Susie. If you would stay on, because I might have comments or questions from my colleagues up here at the table. So at this time, I would ask Senator French or Meyer or Kukesh or, okay, Senator Pasvan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lynn. Thank you. You know, I like the idea of the public recognition, but I also think it's important that in Interior Alaska, for example, we have a lot of volunteer firefighters and EMS, support, and they are the first responders. And so if they have on their vehicle an identification, then that, I think, provides them, if there is any question at whatsoever, easier access to get where they need to be. So I think that it's not just recognition to the public when they're off duty. I think it also facilitates the first responders' presence on the scene, and so I think that that's also a point that is important in my mind.
I had not even thought about that, but I think you're correct.
Okay, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lynn, for bringing this bill forward. You have a personalized license plate, you said?
I have the state house plate.
Yeah, what number are you?
13.
Are you the guy that cut me off last night?
I refuse to answer on the grounds of my
No, my question, Madam Chair, is you state in the bill here that a person must present satisfactory proof. What kind of proof would they need to present in order to get these license plates?
I think that's something that Susie could answer. She's the one that's asked us to carry.
Susie, did you hear the question?
Yes, ma'am, I did. And what proof we're going to ask them to provide is we're going to have a form available either at the fire department or through the Division of Motor Vehicles. You know, we haven't gotten that far with DMV. If this goes through, we can approach it either way. They get it from their fire chief. It'll be a form that the Division of Motor Vehicles approves, and he will verify that they are an active member or they are retired, or, you know, we'll have a signed off by a fire chief or an EMS director or a rescue director. It will be spelled out, and there will be proof provided. We're also going to have supporter plates, and a supporter plate, you won't need to provide any proof. They will cost a little more, but they will also read supporter, so there's no misunderstanding if they were to drive by a scene. You know, somebody say, I saw a firefighter plate. Well, it's very clearly spelled out that it's supporter.
Follow-up, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is there anybody online from DMV? I'm sure they'll administer this program if we pass this law, but I just was wondering how difficult it would be for them.
Whitney Brewster.
I do not have any.
Whitney Brewster is supposed to be online.
I do not. I have David Miller and Susan is all from Valdez.
And Whitney, that's why I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Madam Chair, I noticed on their fiscal note they make it zero, which even though this brings in more money, because it was it $70 I saw per plate, it's probably going to require them a little more time, so it should balance each other out, and that's why it's a zero fiscal note. And
yeah,
that's probably why she's not online.
Sure. Yeah.
No, she did say she was going to be there.
Okay. And she testified previously in the other house. Mm-hmm.
It is helpful, though, as you can see, to the members, that we have someone from the department, because they're skilled and they're the most knowledgeable on, you know, the kind of, when we do put forward different license plates. So Is there any other questions?
No, Madam Chair. It's not critical that we talk to DMV. This is something they do pretty frequently. So if they've testified before in support of it, then I'll take the sponsor's word for it.
Okay, and I would take the sponsor's word for it as well.
Thank you.
Even though he's a reckless driver.
Even though he's a reckless driver. Anyone on this end to my left that would have any questions?
Maybe I'll just make a statement.
Yes, Senator Kukesh.
I appreciate your comments that this is a feel-good bill, that people feel good about seeing things like this. And we'd have a lot of legislation that goes through that's feel-good bills that not everybody's going to be happy about it, but not everybody, I don't think anybody will be mad or against it. But it makes sense and people feel good about it. And I think that once in a while we have to do that, do something that has a feel-good bill. I appreciate that. I have no objection to it. It's just, okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, if there's no other comments or questions, okay, we'll go ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And we'll go ahead now to David Miller. We'll go online for public testimony. And I don't know, Sarah, have you checked to see if anyone has signed up other than in? So, David Miller, Alaska Firefighters, are you online, sir? Oh, he left. Okay. Gee, we were nice.
I don't know.
Okay, and then we just have.
Yeah,
well, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony because the only other one I have is Representative Lynn, and he has already spoke to this. So, do you have any questions or comments? So, what is the will of the committee on this bill? Do I hear a motion to move out HB 73 from committee with individual recommendations?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that we move. House Bill 73 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal.
Okay, and am I hearing any objections? Hearing none. House Bill 73 moves out of state affairs to the Senate Finance. We will take a brief at ease to sign the bill. Affairs back. Next, we'll deal with House Joint Resolution 53, Honor and Remember the Flag, and we have Karen Sawyer before us, who is the sponsor of the bill. Karen, would you just state your name and affiliation, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair and the members of committee. My name is Karen Sawyer. I'm staff to Representative Carl Gatto, and I'm here with a resolution that simply urges Congress to move forward a bill that's sitting in a committee right now, and it's designating the Honor and Remember flag as an official symbol to recognize and honor members of the armed forces who have died in the line of duty. This flag was designed, conceived in the last few years by a man whose son died in Iraq, leaving a wife and baby. And George Lutz is the father. George met with other families who have also lost a loved one, and so they could grieve together. And they all realized that there was not a national or official out there symbol that would honor everybody universally and who had died in service. And so he created this flag, and your packet would show what the different design and colors mean. This is a picture mm-hmm. of the flag, and it can also be personalized with the member's name. And so what they've done is his congressman has put this bill into, introduced it in Congress, and it's just sitting there. In the meantime, thousands of these flags have been given to families from this man's organization, and his intent is to have all families all across the country receive one of these flags. And we would also like to see states pick this up as an official emblem of honor to our fallen ones, and we're hoping that next year we can put in a bill that will also do that to create an Alaska state symbol using the Honor and Remember flag. Two other states have already done that. Several cities have done that. Veterans across the country have endorsed it, veterans groups, and it is made in the United States, which you don't all sometimes see. And we just feel that, another point is that a lot of people think that the American flag represents, to honor those that have fallen. And actually, the American flag is a symbol of what we believe in, how we started, and mostly just freedom. And the bill that's in Congress will says that this flag, the honor and remember flag, will be flown underneath the American flag on certain days of the year, like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, etc., and anywhere that the American flag is flown, like at the White House, congressional buildings, etc. So it's just a way of honoring and remembering our soldiers.
Okay. Thank you. In this resolution, House Bill resolution, that's in Congress, is it 1034, I guess?
Yes.
Have other states, has there been a big, strong movement? Because that certainly is in good spirit that we're trying to have this happen.
Other states have similar legislation in. It's mostly on the East Coast because this is where it was conceived. But what they're doing this year is they're going across the country to every state this summer and into the fall to talk to all of the states' representatives to try to push this as a movement across the nation. And Alaska is one of the first states that has Alaska, there's a chapter to help in-state. Okay. So,
well, I appreciate your proactiveness. Is there any questions from other members? Senator Kukesh.
I wonder if you might, I see a representative isn't here, but does he have any problem at all about the history and changing history and making history?
Through the chair, Representative Kukesh, or Senator Kukesh, changing history.
Well, I just heard a comment that he'd made earlier about a bill that I'm familiar with, and he said, I don't want to change history. I like the way it is now. I don't want to change anything. We shouldn't change anything. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. This is kind of a different scheme. It's something that he believes and he really wants to do. But I also see something that I believe and I really want to see happen. But his argument was, don't want to change history. I want to keep everything the same the way it is. And this is a departure from that. So,
I guess
and maybe
there's not a change.
I just want you to pass the message back to him from me that I asked the question.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you. But I support this. This is good, and I don't have any problem with it. In fact, I like this as much as I like the other bill that we're talking about. You and I are kind of vibrating on, but that's all. Thanks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this important resolution to us. I guess I have a question. I mean, I love the idea of a special symbol honoring our fallen heroes, and I'm just curious about the sort of the interplay here between a nonprofit corporation and the government, and how, I guess I'm wondering why this is stalled in Congress. I'm curious about that, and whether any members there have concerns about sort of putting a flag that's developed by a nonprofit up on the flagpole at certain days of the year and putting it underneath the American flag that was sort of the symbol of our government, and whether or not there's been some maybe move by the Pentagon or some sort of entity within the government to do the same thing, without there being the involvement of a sort of a nonprofit that's not connected with the government. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, Senator French, I had a similar concern about the nonprofit at first when we this was presented to us. And after researching it and especially talking with George Lutz, the founder, it was very clear to me that this is a lifelong passion that he's devoting the rest of his life to, and it's not for the money. It is only people are accepting this. All governments everywhere he's taken this has really taken to this because there isn't anything similar. I don't know why it's stalled in Congress, and it may be just a minor bill that they're just not paying attention to at this time. And I can certainly try to find out more. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but I can certainly try to find out.
I mean, I'm not interested in hanging the resolution up. I'm just curious, and it's just a little different, I guess. It's I mean, I'm not saying it's anything bad. I'm just curious more than anything else And certainly I'm not ascribing a profit motive. There's,
right.
I can't possibly see one here. It's just as I think about the American flag and our government sort of mm-hmm. being behind that, it just seems a little funny to put a nonprofit's flag in there, even though it's for something that I totally support.
Yeah.
So it's just it's more of a curiosity than anything else. Thank you.
Senator Pasfan.
Thank you. I just joined Senator French in that curiosity as to why you would want to fly a flag other than the United States flag over the nation's capital. It seems to me to be diluting the value of that symbol. And again, it's just whether it's whatever organization it might be. And again, I don't mind, you know, if it's the lives of a armed services member that's lost his life, then mm-hmm. maybe it's the Purple Heart that should be flown over the Capitol. And, you know, so I just don't understand mm-hmm. why we need to fly a separate symbol over the nation's capital. And anyway, I'm just somewhat troubled as potentially divisive to the country, and, you know, not all the wars have been supported by all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, certainly the people that fought in them are, you know, they're valiant, but anyway, I just somewhat troubled by the whole concept of flying a flag over the nation that isn't our nation's flag.
Oh, in addition to our, through the chair,
yes.
In addition to our nation's flag, you're saying?
Yeah, any flag that would be underneath our nation's flag. You know, in other words, it's, I think our nation's flag sits at the top of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
There are flags flown under the American flag frequently, including the Alaska state flag, and I've, you know, the POW flag is also the POW MIA flag. So I guess I don't know that there's any concern for it, and it's not a daily flag. It's for certain memorial occasions. So, and mostly the families will be receiving this flag and flying it as well.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, that's it's a private group
mm-hmm.
advancing a cause that I think everyone in the committee finds very honorable and appropriate. But the question is mm-hmm. whether you elevate it to a national symbol
mm-hmm.
that would fly on the nation's capital. And again, I just theoretically thinking about it from that standpoint. So,
So, and I would ask, like, do you envision, say, Memorial Day, do you envision the American flag and then this flag and then below it the Alaska flag, or do you envision it the American flag, the Alaska flag, and then that? I mean, where does it fall when you have...
It would be third down.
Third down.
Yeah,
so it would be under...
I believe that I've seen a picture of three flags flying, and the Honor and Remember flag was the third one down.
The third one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, I think Senator...
I do. Right now, if I understand it correctly, every person who dies in line of duty receives a flag, an American flag.
That's right.
So would this be in lieu of that flag or in addition
no,
to...
No, this would be in addition to.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. Is there anyone online?
Yes, ma'am. David Caswell.
Yes, could you state your name for the record and affiliation at one more time? Thank you, David.
Good morning, folks. My name is Dave Caswell. I'm the state director for Honor and Remember of Alaska. Some very interesting questions there, and I think I will try to address them first before I give you my little prepared presentation that I had this morning.
Okay, you have 3 minutes.
There are three states that have adopted the Honor and Remember flag as its symbol, recognizing the sacrifice of military personnel that have died in the line of duty.
Could you give us those three states? Okay.
And most recently, Oklahoma. Since I found out about this, I've gotten several cities and lots of local organizations to get online with this also. In addressing the flag's position on a flagpole, it would fly underneath the American flag, or if the POW MIA flag was flying, it would fly directly underneath that. And if you think of the positioning, you have the American flag, POW, MIA flag. When the American flag is flown at half staff, by its position, the honor and remember flag underneath the POW flag would be at the half staff point. And also, I would like to tell you that this honor and remember campaign only started in Memorial Day of 2008, and it's already gotten to the West Coast here in Alaska. Whereas the POW MIA flag, it took 18 years before it was accepted nationally. Now on to my presentation. Why another flag? Many have and continue to think that the U.S. flag was our way of honoring and remembering our fallen heroes. Many people do believe this to be true. However, the American flag stands for what we believe, the unity of our people and the diversity of our nation. It is the symbol of what we fight for, rather than an emblem to honor those fallen. Here is how the symbolism of the American flag is generally understood. The U.S. flag, consisting of 13 stripes, 7 red alternating with 6 white, the stripes representing the original 13 colonies. The stars represent the 50 states of our Union. The colors of the flag are symbolic as well. Red symbolizes hardiness and valor. White symbolizes purity and innocence, while blue represents vigilance, perseverance, and justice. Put simply, the dead honor the flag. The flag does not honor the dead. We build memorials, monuments, and erect statues to recognize individuals, deeds, and events. Yet, in our over 200-year history, there has never been recognition of the sacrifices made by the more than 1.6 million servicemen and servicewomen that have died in military service to our country to ensure that we can enjoy the benefits that we have and live our lives in freedom. Currently, we take time out from our lives maybe 3 times a year to remember these individuals. On the anniversary of their death or funeral, Memorial Day and Veterans Day. In your heart, don't you feel that they deserve more for the sacrifice that they made for you? It is for those 1.6 million who can't be here and for their families that I speak in favor of this. Thus is the need for this national campaign, that we as a nation, made up of individuals, groups and organizations, communities and states, we'll honor and remember these fallen heroes with a nationally recognized symbol, specifically designed and intended for that single purpose, for this symbol to fly as a constant reminder to all of us. A nation that would forget its heroes will itself be forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caswell. Is there anyone else that's online to... Okay, seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. Do my committee members have any questions or comments at this time? So what is the will of the committee on this bill? Should we hold it, and are we okay to move it?
I'm okay.
Okay. Then do I hear a motion to move H.J.R. 53, Honor and Remember Flag, out of committee?
Yes.
With the... Go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move H.J.R. 53 from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Do I hear any objections to that? Hearing none, H.J.R. 53 moves out of State Affairs to Senate Rules. We'll take a brief at ease to sign. And bringing State Affairs Committee back to order, we'll go ahead now with, let's see, H.B. 225, State Procurement Code. Before us is Crystal Kahneman, and Crystal, would you like to go ahead with the sponsor statement at this time?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Fairclough. What we have before us, House Bill 225, pretty much streamlines the state procurement code. Since it is a 46-section, 21-page bill, in the matter of time, and since you do have the sectional in front of you, I was going to briefly go through some of the major highlights, if that's okay with you, Madam Chair, and then...
Is that the will of the committee? Is that okay? Okay.
And then any further sections that require more in-depth look, we'd be more than happy to address for you. House Bill 225 makes numerous changes to the state procurement code. These changes are to streamline the code to provide for more consistency, to ultimately have a more efficient procurement process. We're streamlining the application of the bidder preferences, which can sometimes be complex and confusing for state employees and vendors. Some of the major highlights, the bill does eliminate the vendor list, with everything being accessed online. Having boxes and boxes of actual paperwork in the back isn't always necessarily a good thing to have. It also adds in language for a multi-step revised sealed bidding process. This is done mainly in the private sector. And in House State Affairs, they did add in a section for reporting language so the state can see what cost savings there may be to the state. The finance CS before you also exempts construction from the multi-step bidding and adds conforming language for the AEA and ADA exemption. House Bill 225 directs procurement officers to consider preferences that are only in statute. This essentially eliminates the Alaska offers preference, which is set out in regulation. Basically, vendors and persons who qualify for the Alaska bidder preference also qualify for the Alaska offers preference, and that gives them an additional 10% preference. Vern Jones, the chief procurement officer, is here. I know that there's been some pushback in recent days on that preference, and so he'll be able to address that in more detail for you. House Bill 225 also increases the threshold of the informal procurement process from $50,000 to $100,000 for goods and services, and from $100,000 to $200,000 for construction, and increases lease space procurements from 3,000 to 7,000 square feet. Those haven't been updated since the code went into effect back in the early 90s, and with inflation and all of that. It's one of those things to look at now. It also considers the Alaska consolidates the Alaska bidder preference and other related preferences into one section, and it also includes a preference for Alaskan veterans, which is a 5% preference up to $5,000. It also eliminates the preference for employers of persons with disabilities, adds in a $250 protest filing fee, also adds a provision for the procurement officer to temporarily delay the award of a contract due to a protest versus a stay of award, and adds in a definition for electronic signature for electronic filings. So. With that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm available for questions. Also, as I stated before, Vern Jones, the Chief Procurement Officer, is here for a more in-depth evaluation.
You maybe mentioned the renegotiation section 27. If I missed that, I'm sorry. But where they can, the procurement officer can go back and renegotiate the terms and conditions?
Yes, ma'am. We do throw in that new section, and Vern Jones can explain the reasoning behind adding in that new section.
Okay. And then before he comes up here, Section 1, Line 13, the 5% preference for bidders. This is a lot of information for us, but this is the most important thing for me is to get the preferences to Alaska companies, and that's high on my list. But with that. Thank you for the sponsor statement and walking us through that, and I will ask for comments and questions. Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I believe you and the sponsor's bill originally was just a simple bill. You just wanted to do a veteran's preference, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, we did introduce House Bill 24, which is the Alaska Veterans Preference, which was the 5% preference up to $5,000. And then we were approached by Vern Jones that said, hey, since you're already dabbling in the procurement code, you know, would you mind? And we looked it over and thought, since it hadn't been updated since the early 90s, that it would be a good piece of legislation to carry.
Madam Chair, yes. Yeah, and I agree. The procurement code needed to and does need to be cleaned up, because over the years, what happens is we, the legislature, want to help a certain group because, you know, they're our constituents or they're Alaska companies, and I think it's been abused over the process. And I'll have a question for the procurement officer. You know, I'm told of people who, you know, basically just rent an office for a couple months, hang up a shingle, and then they say they're Alaska business and they get the 5% preference. And so that kind of defeats the purpose of helping Alaska companies if that's the case. But getting back to what your original attempt was, which was to help the veterans, which I think we all want to do, how did you arrive at the $5,000 cap?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, we had arrived at that cap because of the stacking of preferences. Currently, there's the Alaska Offers preference. And the other preferences that are currently out there, they're stackable. And so when we were adding up the cost value for not only the state, but also for the businesses, it was trying to find that happy balance of ultimately what we could find to help the veterans, but also something that wouldn't be too much of a cost to the state. Depending on whether or not they qualified, they'd qualify for the Alaska Bidder Preference, the Alaska Offers Preference. If there was a disability preference thrown in there as well, plus the veterans preference, you could see upwards of a 25% preference, which absolutely
is okay with me.
would be good to help Alaska businesses, but we also had to rationalize the cost to the state, because we would be subsidizing that difference. And on high scale projects, if we're talking millions of dollars, it ends up being, you know, quite a high number. And so that's when we decided up to $5,000 so basically if it was a $100,000 project, they would qualify for the full 5%, and anything over the $100,000, it would still remain $5,000. So.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I can follow up.
Follow up, yes.
You cited some examples and said that, you know, you stack all these up, it can get to be a big number, and I agree. But now that you've merged your bill in with this other bill, because I think this bill actually gets rid of the offers preference. Mm-hmm. And some other things, the disability preference and other things, again, that we'll ask the procurement officer why we're getting rid of and what the rationale is. So with that in mind, do you still want to keep the cap at $5,000?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, it is the belief of the sponsor, my boss, who unfortunately can't be here today. She would like to see that remain intact.
Even with these other things going out, if they stay out, okay.
Senator Meyer, that is correct. Ultimately, it is the will of the committee, and we recognize the process, and we'll go with what we have. So, but ultimately, you know, it's the will of the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to come forward now and state your name for the record as the procurement officer for the state of Alaska?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Vern Jones. I'm the state's chief procurement officer, and in response to Senator Meyer's question, why specifically $5,000? I can tell you a lot of discussion and thought went into that dollar amount, and I think it helps put things in perspective if we realize that in this bill we would be increasing the threshold for formal procurements for non-construction to $100,000. Keep in mind that the vast majority of the procurements that the state conducts will be under that small procurement amount. So when you think about it, a 5% cap at $100,000 for the I'd say 80-90% of our procurements will be in that small category. Therefore, 80 or 90% of them will this cap will never come into play, because 5%, the maximum you would get on a small procurement would be $5,000 anyway. So the only time that that cap would come into play was in the much larger dollar procurements. And again, the sponsor's desire is not to just have a an open-ended preference, that we are sensitive to the cost that these things bring to the state, and that was the balance and why we chose the $5,000 amount in effect for the majority procurements, and especially the procurements that our small businesses compete for. The cap would not come into play.
Okay. I was not able to get to Senator Pasfan. You had a question before I invited him, and I apologize. I publicly apologize for that. Is it okay to go forward? Okay. Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Again, on the veterans' preference, because I know you want to get into some of the other areas. is it my understanding then some of the bigger projects that maybe that involve federal money, these preferences all are null and nullified? Then you get into the federal preferences, which could be Davis Bacon Act, wages, and et cetera. It's a different set of rules. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, whenever we're using federal funds, especially from, say, federal highway funds, I should say certain federal requirements come with some federal grants. Some of them prevent us from implementing in-state preferences. So Fed highway monies, generally speaking, were barred from in-state preferences. So none of the Alaska bidder preference nor this veteran preference would be applied, because it's an Alaskan veteran preference, and to qualify for it, you will have to qualify as an Alaskan vendor to begin with. So you're right, it would not apply. This would only apply for the most part with state fund, when state funds are involved, and some federal funds don't have that rule, a conflict with our laws. The funds that Health and Social Services use, for example, don't have that same prohibition. But I know a big one is the federal highways monies, and it does have that conflict.
If I could follow up.
You follow up, Senator Mayer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. And I think it's confusing to people. When they hear procurement, they think, you're buying office supplies, you're buying furniture, you're buying desks, you're buying computers, whatever. But it also entails services. So like the building of a road or hiring a consultant or whatever is also part of procurement, and that's probably where the bigger dollars are. And now the last 4 or 5 years we've been blessed with having a lot of state money, and so we have been building more and more roads just using all state funds, and some of those roads, of course, are $8, $10, $20 million. So in those cases where you're using just state funds, then these preferences, including the veterans preference, would apply. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to point out, Madam Chairman, if
yes.
I may, a question was raised earlier. Even if this bill were to pass as is, we would have 10 preferences. So we're eliminating one of the three disability preferences, and we're saying in here that you shall not apply preferences that aren't statutorily enacted. But even so, we would have 10 preferences to benefit Alaskans standing even with the bill there. So they are cumulative. Their preferences on the firm itself and the makeup of the entity and the residence of the ownership, as well as products from Alaska.
So is it safe to say that as leader of procurement, do you like this bill?
Definitely. I had a big hand in drafting it, and it's a lot of this is a result of trial and error and, frankly, failures over the years and taking notes on, you know, if we ever had a chance to fix certain things, here's what we would do, and this is a compilation of that. And we think it moves us forward. It simplifies and streamlines and I think demystifies procurement, and I think it will be good for state government and good for business.
And then a follow-up would be, do you feel you've had adequate time to put into this bill, because this is so close to the end of session and it's quite in depth? And if you had, say, another year on this, would that be would there be even more additional changes?
Madam Chairman, I don't think so. Like I said, we've been keeping track. It's been many years since the procurement code's been updated. I've been here since before our current procurement code was enacted in 1987, and have seen procurement develop through the years. This has in it everything that we think we need to modernize and to provide the tools that state government needs, and to simplify it so that everyone involved can understand it well.
Okay, I'm going to turn to Senator Pasvan.
Madam Chair, you know, one of the concerns that arise when you talk about a preference is that you're discouraging competitive bidding, because the preferences may overwhelm the competitive bidding process. And, you know, I would like to hear your thoughts on the disincentive for competitive bidding because of the incentivization of the process through these preferences.
Through the chair, Senator Pasvan, that's a good point. I think what we have now in state procurement, oftentimes, especially in the services arena, when we're using a competitive sealed proposal or an RFP, we have a somewhat non-competitive situation because of our preferences. I would point out the preference that we're one of the preferences that we're eliminating here is the employers of the disabled preference. That still leaves two disability-related preference. So if you're a business owner with a disability, or the ownership is a partnership or an LLC, and those folks are disabled, they get a preference. Likewise, we have an employment program preference. It's an even higher, I think it's 10 points. What this bill would eliminate is a middle preference, employers of the disabled, that so far has only benefited a total of two individuals, and I think it's being taken advantage of. That preference states that if 50% or more of your workforce is disabled, you get a 10-point break on price, in addition to the Alaska bidder preference of 5 points. But an example of how I can take advantage of that is I can spin off an LLC or start a new company or have a subsidiary, hire one person, maybe a relative, and they're disabled. I get a big advantage over my competition, and that's exactly what has happened with the only two entities that are taking advantage of this. And in fact, I can tell you that a total of two disabled individuals are benefiting from that preference. The other preference that this would effectively eliminate is the Alaska offerer's preference. The offerer's preference has no basis in statute. It's strictly in regulation. There's nothing in the statute that directs any kind of a preference in that manner. It's also the only preference that is not cost-based. It only applies to RFP situations when we're evaluating a number of factors in addition to cost. So the way that works is it's a minimum of 10% of the evaluation criteria. So if you got an RFP, it's a 100-point scale, 10 points automatically goes to the qualifying entity, and the same qualification exists for the Alaska bidder preference. So you've got a 100-point scale, 10 points is reserved for the offeror's preference. Generally speaking, we recommend 60% be allocated to cost. We require a minimum of 40% allocated to cost by policy, but 60% is what we recommend, just because we think it's important to say, you know, we value cost, and that's going to be a big consideration of ours. So if you take 60% of cost, 10% Alaska offers preference, it only leaves you 30% to evaluate the qualifications, experience, the quality of proposal you get. We're having a difficult time in procurement trying to make decisions on often very high dollar procurements with a very few number of points we can look at and evaluate to pick the best offer. Another concern I have with that is how you can achieve the Alaska offer's preference. The same qualification exists for the bidder preference, and that is you must have a place of business staffed by the bidder at least 6 months before the bid or the RFP issuing date. So if you're an outside firm, you know that a contract is coming to an end, you know that there's going to be a re-procurement, an RFP at some point. You send someone up here, you open up an office, you man that office for 6 months, you get that 10 points. And I would remind the committee also that 10 points is in addition to the 5% break on price you get in the evaluation, whatever evaluation weighting is applied to price. Now, I think it's very reasonable that you see the Alaska bidder preference, and this bill does not affect the Alaska bidder preference. That's 5% on price, and the idea behind that when the legislation was passed is that costs are higher up here in Alaska, and we need to level the playing field for Alaskan businesses. I think this does that, but the Alaska offers preference goes well beyond that. It isn't affected. It doesn't have anything to do with price. And I can tell you many, many times over, I've been told that from numbers of firms that when I ask them, why have you not submitted a proposal on this? We were expecting you. You're one of the major players out there. They said, well, one of our competitors opened up an office in Alaska. They get that preference that you guys have up there. And there isn't 10% difference between us and them or them and anybody else in this field, and it's insurmountable. I've been told many, many times that that 10 points is an insurmountable obstacle that really hampers our competition. And you see this, I won't call it cheating because it's not cheating. There's nothing improper or illegal about
it. Manipulating.
They're taking advantage of our generous preferences, but I don't think that they're meeting the intent that that certainly the legislators had in mind when they passed our procurement code, but they didn't have a say in this offeror's preference because the executive did that on its own. It's not based in statute. And I think you see, you know, manipulation like that. I think you see a non-competitive situation as a result.
Okay, thank you. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Passman? And then I'll go to Senator French.
You know, what I'm trying to focus on is obviously when you have preferences by either price or rating structure, you adjust the order of who wins. In other words, that's the whole purpose of the preference. And you create an imputed price that is lower than the bid price. And what is the magnitude of the dollars of the difference between the bid price and the imputed price so that we understand how much we are really subsidizing to advance the preferences?
Through the chair, Senator Passman, that's an excellent question, and I wish that I could answer it for you, but The fact is, although we have a central purchasing, a small central purchasing organization that I oversee, we do not have an automated procurement system. And the fact is that most procurements happen outside my organization, out in the agencies, through a delegation of authority from me. And we don't have a mechanism to track that. So I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you with some certainty that these things do cost us, obviously they cost us money when you give a preference to someone, whether it be cost or the other.
If possibly yes, I could focus on more, you know, you had indicated that there were awards that you were aware of that you thought someone could have given a bid, but they just said, look, I can't compete because Alaska's preference structure is such that I can never be competitive. What is the magnitude of the dollars, for example, that you think we might be losing?
Well, I can tell you there's a procurement coming up that's the statewide systems replacement procurement that would establish an ERP system that's been estimated between 35 to upwards of $100 million. And I've been told specifically by firms that if this preference stays in, that they will have no choice but to not compete. To me, that's the definition of non-competitive. You've got to remember that it's not just a matter of throwing your hat in and seeing what the results are. These firms spend a lot of money and time. And I've been told by several that several hundred thousand dollars is not unheard of as far as an internal cost in order to submit a proposal. And they're very high stakes. You're talking $200,000-$400,000 to submit a proposal in some of these big projects, knowing that your competitor, who's very similar to you and competitive with you, has a 10% overall advantage plus a 5% cost advantage. If you do the math, it's just not worth them to spend that money to compete. So I think, you know, the net result is a non-competitive situation in many of our RFPs because of this preference. I'd also like to point out that this bill basically says these are all the preferences and you shouldn't apply anymore. And that's how the preference with no basis in statute would be effectively eliminated. I mean, likewise, I as a procurement officer, if I chose to, I could implement my own preference. That offers preference, for example, says at least 10%. If I would have the discretion now of making that 50% or 75%, or I could make up my own preference. You know, I want a preference for Welshman because I'm a Jones, right? This bill basically says you can't invent your own preferences. We, the legislature, are telling you these are the ones that we want enacted.
Okay. You'll follow up, and then I'll go to Senator French.
Mm-hmm. Yield to a good friend from Anchorage. You know, what I'm hearing is that potentially the state is spending millions of dollars potentially in one award more in money, maybe fives of millions or tens of millions of dollars more in money than it needs to, and that there are, in the current structure, we have a mechanism that effectively bars bidders from entering the field of bidding, and then those that do enter the field, the magnitude of the money that the state is subsidizing is currently unknown because there is no tracking of how much we're subsidizing.
Through the chair, Senator Passavant, I think you're right on that. I know anecdotally many times that people just don't compete because of the preferences. I know that there's an opportunity there to charge more and still win because of the preferences. It's just unfortunate that we don't have a system to capture that.
I'll yield.
Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. One, do you know whether the State Chamber of Commerce supports the bill?
Madam Chair, Senator French, I do believe the State Chamber is here. I did have a conversation with them yesterday.
Currently, they are neutral. I did, when we introduced this bill, put out the emails and the phone calls, and for over a year, we've been waiting to hear from the different companies that may or may not be affected by this, and it wasn't really until the last couple days that we've started to get pushback, which is frustrating as carrying the legislation, but and they'll be able to justify this better. What they told me is they were neutral as of right now. So,
thank you. And thank you. Slightly different topic, but kind of following up on what Senator Meyer said about road projects and, you know, the frequency with which we're letting out, you know, say $10 million contracts. I know we're doing that in Anchorage fairly regularly and around the state. And I guess it would be helpful for me just to see as a sort of an exercise a, one-page breakdown of how on, say, a $10 million road project, these different preferences would add up and affect the state and cost the state. You know, I it's not that I don't trust your representations. I'm sure you're right, but it would just be helpful for me to see it in concrete terms how on a good-sized project, you know, a $10 million project, these preferences can stack up to the detriment of the state and how this bill would reshape the current state of the law so that we'd all get better public works done at a more competitive price.
Certainly we can do that. I'm Senator French, the chair. I'm not sure a road project would be the best one to illustrate it, given that many road projects receive federal funds which knock out some of our preferences, but I could just
generate illustration of, you know, a $10 million office building or something along those lines, a sizable contract where the preferences come into play and potentially cost the state money.
Certainly we can do that, sir.
It's an excellent suggestion. Okay. If there's any other questions, Senator Meyer?
I do. First of all, can you explain, just so we're all clear, what the difference between an offeror's preference and a bidder's preference?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, the Alaska bidder preference was established in statute. It's currently in 3630-170. I gave you the qualification for that, 6 months of operation prior to a bid. And that is a 5% preference for cost. So if you bid $100 and you qualify for the preference, the bid to me looks like $95. The Alaska offers preference, and that Alaska bidder preference applies to all bids, small, formal, services, goods, everything. The Alaska offers preference has no basis in statute. It's enacted in regulation. It only applies to competitive sealed proposals or RFPs. So we're talking mostly services or whatever we're buying with RFPs. It's 10 points. It's a 10% of whatever evaluation criteria. Remember, with RFPs, we're evaluating price along with a number of other factors, experience, the quality of your proposal, the likelihood of your firm being able to pull off a project of this size, and so on. So there's some subjectivity in there in the evaluation, but it's in addition to price, and it'd be 10 points out of 100 on a 100-point scale.
Okay. Madam Chair, and then so all the bidders who are bidding on these projects or want to bid, do they understand all these different preferences? And I can almost see that some would just say, the heck with it, I don't understand it, so I'm going to go on to a different project.
Through the chair, I think the higher the stakes, the more sophisticated the firms are, the more they understand these preferences, and the more they're likely to take advantage of them and change their business to take advantage of them. I think it's fair to say, as I mentioned, that that's become a problem for us, that in many instances where, especially where there's no in-state expertise for what we're looking for, if one firm has an alliance or an affiliate here or has the wherewithal to come up and establish a business for the sake of one procurement, that they take full advantage of that.
Okay. Madam Chair, yeah, I think we do need to be careful of that, because I think what we've done is basically eliminated the small mom and pop businesses with a complicated procurement code to the point now where only those who are more sophisticated can have a legal staff, can have procurement officers, whatever, research in this and following it. And I do agree with Senator Pascavant, and you and I have talked about this. We do need to update our whole procurement department and centralize that. I was amazed to find out we're still doing manual purchase recs and manual purchase orders. In my opinion, this should all be done electronically, keep track of what we're spending, how much we're spending, and then negotiate with these various vendors better prices. And say, look, here's a dollar volume the state spends with you. Now give us some better rates. You're not able to do that now because you don't have any idea how much you're spending. And I think I was surprised to find out our procurement department that he heads actually doesn't do that much procurement. You're more into the leasing part of things. Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, you're on the subcommittee with me, education department wants to hire their own procurement officer, which totally baffled me. I mean, that should be done in a centralized place, and that person, that buyer, should then buy not only for education, but for DOT and HESS and all the other departments. But anyway, we're not going to resolve that today. But when it comes to leasing, which is what you do, do the same preferences come into play? Like if you're going to lease some office space, if they're Alaska, if Alaska business owns it, then they get a preference over somebody outside?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes. One slight bit of information. We have a central purchasing section as well as a leasing section. It's very small. There's five contract buyers in each, and there's probably around 200 people out in the agencies doing the buying. So we do have a central office, but it's not fair to say it's centralized. It's very decentralized. But yes, currently, lease procurements of office space leasing, for example, is all these preferences apply. That's one of the things that this bill would do in another section, would exempt leases from these preferences, because after all, we're after a building. It's a piece of real estate. We really don't, personally, we don't care what the residency status of the owner is and whether they're disabled or so on and so forth. All we care about is that space. So we think that was something that really wasn't contemplated well when our procurement code was enacted. People probably had a chance to think that through. They might have exempted it, and this bill does exempt leases, which I think makes good sense.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up on that then, because the legislature, for example, is looking at leasing or buying the Chevron Texaco building, used to be the Unocal building. So are they considered a Alaska company?
Through the chair, a point of clarification. When our procurement code preferences applies, when the procurement is subject to the code, obviously, and when we do office space lease procurements, the code applies. When we're buying a piece of real estate, that's exempted. So if you're buying a building, none of the preferences would apply. The code would not apply because the idea is real estate is unique.
Well, what if we were leasing, though?
If you were leasing it, then yes, that business would qualify. They have an operation here in Alaska, and to my knowledge, they would.
Okay, because if I may, Madam Chair, we're currently leasing the building we're in now on 4th Street, and I don't know if leasing is an option on the building they're looking at now, or if they want to buy. We don't sit on Ledge Council, or I don't think any of us here do so. And Madam Chair, yeah, I do have some other questions. This has generated a lot of phone calls, so I apologize. And it, unfortunately for you, I know something about this area. People have asked why ADA and AEA are exempt from the procurement code. And maybe you can, there's a lot of money spent there, and maybe you can.
And we do have Chris Roots on as well. He'll be on later too to answer.
He's in charge of the procurement, yeah. So.
I could summarize that, and I would just say that the AEA and ADA are represented here if they have any other comments. But in general, procurement is I think right now unduly complicated for those entities because they have procurement of goods and services, which is under my authority. They procure construction, which is under DOT authority with slightly different procedures. They buy and procure on behalf of Denali Commission under federal process. So they have about four different rules that they have to follow, four different sets of rules that they have to follow. Many instances, they're buying investment instruments and looking at opportunities for development in Alaska. And a lot of those, to begin with, don't really lend itself to the competitive process if you're looking for the best type of an investment. I know they bought a dry dock a few years ago, and it was a difficult procurement for them because our procurement code, like you say, is sort of meant to buy, you know, the nuts and bolts of state government. They're not out there for, I don't think these kinds of laws were out to envision when we're buying an investment opportunity like AEA and ADA does. But a lot of it also is so that they can implement. They'll have to, if this bill passes and they're exempted, they will have to, through a public process, develop regulations that would govern and their procurement, and they would have then one consistent set of rules to follow. It'd make it a lot simpler for them and the people they do business with. One of the things that I could probably put to rest here is that there's a lot of questions about Davis-Bacon. Exempting them from the procurement code would have no impact on their requirement to continue to follow and pay Davis-Bacon prevailing wages, because that's in a different section of statutes, in a different chapter. That would still apply to their procurement.
Thank you for answering that. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Can I just follow up?
Okay.
And I'll quit.
Okay. Then we're going to move on.
Okay. And again, we can argue all day, you know, whether ADA or AEA, or I think there's some others that are exempt from the procurement code. That's really not relevant today. But I do think, though, that we should track how much they're spending, because it is state money. And then you could take that information, have that as leverage against various vendors and suppliers throughout the state and nation, and say, you know, here's the volume that we do through ADA, AEA, and the state of Alaska, and you know, give us your best rates. And I know you want to do that too. It's just a matter of money and resources and time.
Through the chair, I appreciate that. And that I mentioned our administrative systems replacement project, and hopefully through that project we'll be able to finally attain an automated procurement system. And even though we're not highly centralized, I would at least then be able to capture the volume and take advantage of the volume and finally be a smart consumer and be able to drive better contract negotiations and prices as a result. So I do appreciate that, and that is part of the long-term plan.
Okay, we're going to have one more question from Senator Pasfan, and then we'll wrap this up.
Yes, that what the question by Senator Meyer was the issue that I was going to raise is, as far as the reporting by department and then by preference, you know, even if we do this and there are 10 categories of preferences, it would be nice to know what we're, quote, giving away per preference. You know, it's always nice to feel good about things, but if you don't have the price tag about it, you don't have to be accountable for what you're giving away. And I think that if we could track that through a reporting system, then we can be accountable for what we're providing by preference. So I think that that's ultimately part of the modernization of the procurement code.
Certainly.
Okay. And thank you for your expertise helping us out with this bill. Thank you, Mrs. Kahneman. Now we'll go ahead and go online. We have open public testimony here with Steve Boyd from Anchorage, and he's with the Natural Electrical Contractors.
Yes, Madam Chair, do you hear me?
Yes, could you state your name for the record, please, and your affiliation?
Yes, my name's Steve Boyd. I'm with the Alaska chapter of the National Electrical Contractors Association.
Go ahead and give your testimony, Mr. Boyd.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. It's been interesting listening to the comments. We would like to go on record. We've got some concerns with two or three sections, of the proposed bill, Section 6 and its interface with Section 36 does indeed, according to how we read the bill, exempt ADA and AEA from the procurement code of the state. We don't see a compelling reason to do that at this time. You have a large agency handling large and varied projects at the Department of Transportation, and they've only seen the need to exempt themselves in certain marine installations and the Alaska Marine Highway. Again, we don't see a compelling reason to change that for ADA and AEA, and we have some concern based on some budget and audit committee reports that we just received recently. Also, we have some concern over the removal of the equal to or greater than 10% bidder or offer preference. And in fact, listening to the testimony, if there's concern about it not being in statute, maybe now is the time to put that into the statute. The RFP process and the reference to offers, that is becoming more and more close to construction bidders. Corps of Engineers, I believe DOT has even used RFP process to develop projects in, around the state and on the bases as well. Again, I just, at this time, we need, I think we need to leave ADA and AEA defined as agencies and compel them to follow the rules that are in place. And I would suggest putting the Alaska preference into the statute and tighten up the rules to qualify for it. In other words, a six-month period to qualify it as an Alaskan business when we require individuals to live here 1 year for a fishing license, for college tuition, and a permanent fund dividend. With that, I'd conclude my testimony. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
And thank you for your testimony today and coming, making time available to give it to us. Next, we have Chris Roots from ADA and AEA.
Hello, Madam Chair.
State your name for the record, please. And your
My name is Chris Rutz. That's R-U-T-Z. I am the procurement officer for both ADA and AEA. And my primary purpose here today was to answer any questions the committee might have regarding AEA or ADA's procurement practices and with respect to our desire to, and I want to clarify, we're not asking to be exempt from the procurement code. What we're asking to do is to be set up so that we would develop regulations like the other public corporations in the state that are distinct, separate legal entities from the state of Alaska. If anyone would have any questions with respect to that, I'd be glad to answer them.
Committee members, Senator French.
Maybe you could give us a couple of examples of how the regulations that you would adopt for a procurement would differ from state law so that we can understand why you need to be treated differently.
Well, I guess right now probably the biggest one is relating to the audit that the legislature did a couple years ago was relating primarily to our RPSU project where we were doing procurement on behalf of communities in the for the Denali Commission. These were procurements that were basically grants that were exempt from the procurement code. And the agency developed internal policies to conduct those procurements because they were basically we were spending the city's money, not the state's money. And in following those policies, we were told maybe we should do something a little bit different. And the audit basically said we should probably follow something comparable to the procurement code. In that case, what we have, since the audit, we have begun establishing internal procedures to do that, but we don't have any regulations in force that would basically say, yes, these are the rules that you're supposed to follow with respect to the procurement code. In effect, I do not see a lot of differences in terms of what our regulations would be from what is under the procurement code right now, except that we would develop one set of regulations that would parallel the code versus right now as an agency, or I should say as a public corporation that's subject to a board of directors. We have the statutes that we comply with, and as Mr. Jones indicated, we also have the regulations that are there, and then we have two different governing entities, DOT governing the construction side of things, and then we also have DOA governing the non-construction side of things. In addition to that, we also have these exemptions, which are when we're following doing things on behalf of other entities. On the AEA side, where we run into that issue is when we're doing these grants on behalf of communities. On the ADA side, we often get into developer projects where the developer will be bringing the money to the table, and they'll be spending their money, and then we'll be going out and in some cases doing due diligence and other things. So we do have a number of, levels of procedure that we've got to go through in terms of dictating. I would see what we would be following is probably something closer to the statute, exactly the way that the statute is current 3630 is set up, and in terms of developing the procedures, the primary difference would be under protest claims and disputes. It would come instead of drawing in the Department of Transportation or the Department of Administration, it would come back to our board. In terms of handling that. But in terms of the competitive processes that we would use, we would mirror current processes and procedures that are used by DOT on the construction side, and then we would also mirror processes and procedures that are currently used by DOA on the non-construction side.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Is there any follow-up, Senator French?
No.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and if there's no one else off net, we're going to take, we have six people to go through, and we do have to be on the floor at 11, so if you'll just keep it to 2 or 3 minutes, and I'll bring up Vern Jones with the Department of Administration.
You can call
Vera.
Yeah.
Is it Vera?
No, he just testified. He's with the
procurement. Oh, so sorry. Yes. Luke Fanning.
No, I will not be testifying.
Okay. And then also signed up was Ralph Kirby. Ralph, would you come forward?
Kirby.
Good morning.
Would you state your name for the record?
My name is Ralph Kibbe. I am president of Chatham Electric, a statewide electrical construction company. And I quickly trying to delete a lot of what Steve Boyd already said, and so please bear with me. As it is written, I am opposed to Section 6 and Section 20 of 225. They've already been having a difficult time meeting Title 36 according to the audits, and as an Alaskan with Alaskan workers, I'm opposed to anything that would make it difficult to put local people to work. It has been my opinion that a good portion of the projects that we see come within our region in Southeast Alaska and in the Bush communities are projects that are being competed by others outside of those regions, and in some cases outside of the state. In listening to what I just earlier, I was coming to ask you folks to remove Section 6 and Section 20 until we have more time to look at it. It wasn't part of the original legislation. But if it needs to go through today, at the least, let's add something to it, because right now it's fairly nebulous. I would like to, at a minimum, see that no less stringent than Title 36, as the previous speaker was speaking of the rules and regulations that they had thought they would be following. Again, they handle millions and millions of dollars. I'm just real scared that we'll let the fox in the hen house. I have no reason to believe that that's happening. But at this point in time, it is very hard as somebody, sophisticated or not, within the construction industry to follow all the different rules and regulations to do with procurement with all the different agencies and whatnot. I would just implore them, or you folks, to have them continue and comply with Title 36.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kibbe. Is there any questions? Senator Pasvan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kibbe. Mm-hmm. How does the offeror's preference at 10% as to the rating system, as I understand it, how does that affect your business, and what is it that you believe that your business would be hurt if it wasn't there? Because as I understand, you want to, as Mr. Boyd said, incorporate the offeror's preference into statute now. That's what he was, and so I assume that's what you're saying, and how does that apply to you?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to speak on that. As it was written within the bill, it's fairly nebulous. I didn't realize there was an issue there until you dug further and deeper into it, and I just did in the last few days. So I wish I had an opinion to share with you, but at this time I don't. And I just know there's cause for concern.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Wayne Stevens, the Alaska State Chamber. Wayne, would you come forward, please? Yep, we like your shoes. It's waking us up.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Wayne Stevens, President and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. We genuinely appreciate the hard work of the sponsor and her staff to clean up Alaska Procurement Code. Procurement officer is recommending a number of very laudable changes via this bill to clean up issues and conflicts in the state's procurement process. The one item causing consternation is the Alaska Administrative Code 2 AAC 12.260, subsection E, as a regulation, is not backed up anywhere in statute. It's been noted that a preference should be statutorily in place. We would encourage an amendment to the bill to memorialize in statute what is currently incorporated in regulation, and this would address the major concerns raised by our membership. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne. Is there any questions from the... Okay, next we'll go to... I didn't see Senator French.
Sorry, and I meant to ask someone earlier about this, and I just don't know if you've seen the letter that Mr. Baldwin drafted on this topic. It's dated April 3rd, Sander Shivens. I don't know who that is, but I just don't know whether that's come to your attention.
I've seen a draft of it, and I'm not prepared to comment on another attorney's letter, being that I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express, and I'm not an attorney.
Thank you.
You are a wise member of this chamber. Okay, next we'll go with Shelley Wright. Is Shelley, please come forward and state your name and your affiliation for our record.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Shelley Wright. I'm the Executive Director for Southeast Conference. And I want to thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to speak on the behalf of Southeast Conference today. For those of you who aren't familiar with Southeast Conference, we're a private membership organization that works to advance the collective interests of the people and communities of Southeast Alaska. We are the regional development organization, the federally designated economic development district, and the USDA Resource Conservation Development Council for the region. Our mission is to develop strong economies, healthy communities, and a quality environment in Southeast Alaska. In keeping with that mission, we believe that hiring within the state of Alaska is necessary for the survival of our communities. I would like to speak to what is not in the bill, and that is the Alaska offeror's preference. The state's procurement preferences exist to provide advantages to Alaska businesses over competing outside interests. This law has helped hundreds of companies across Alaska and in Southeast create thousands of employment opportunities for Alaskans and has allowed millions, if not billions, of state dollars to remain in Alaska. The removal of the Alaska offeror's preference will put Alaska companies at a huge disadvantage in competing against outside firms and result in the loss of significant numbers of Alaska jobs by shipping those jobs out of Alaska. In listening to the testimony this morning, I would like to ask, is the manipulator the exception or the rule? We have a lot of Alaska companies in Southeast Alaska that are at a disadvantage. It is the cost of doing business is a lot higher in Southeast Alaska and rural Alaska. And the Alaska preference certainly does assist in those companies getting what they need. The smaller companies I know you talked about the it being a quagmire and eliminating the smaller companies out of the mix because they're not aware of the rules and the regulations. But some of our smaller companies are well aware that if they have that advantage, they do take advantage of it and are able to get the procurement and the jobs that they need. Southeast Conference has passed a resolution. I have it with me. I haven't turned it into anyone yet today, but I have it with me, and I can certainly offer it up to you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony at this time and open it up for questions and comments from it's my intention to maybe hold this until Thursday because there's some suggestion for amendments, and I would encourage the sponsor to get with the State Chamber of Commerce and see if we can come back on Thursday with an amendment. I'd prefer that you offer that up to us, and we'll work it over, and I think it'll go a little bit smoothly. There's an awful lot to this bill. So with House Bill 225 being as in-depth, and is that agreeable to the committee members?
Yes. If I may, Madam Chair, and again, I apologize to the sponsor. Your bill was just a simple veterans preference bill, and it's gotten ballooned into redoing the procurement code. But I think one thing we're hearing consistently, and maybe you and the procurement officer, Vern, can talk, is putting the Alaska Offers Preference in statute. And I don't know what that does to the procurement code if we do that, but that would be something that I'd be interested in hearing more about on Thursday.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony, and I'm going to gavel out.
Did I talk too much to you?